everybody, and welcome to the Zelda Universe podcast. I'm your host, Cody, and I'm here with a new host today. Hello, Kelly.
Hi, everybody. My name's Kelly. I'm the editor.
So you may know Kelly from the credits section of this podcast. She's been our head editor for this run of podcasts, and now she's going to host with me because she's got some great ideas. She actually wanted to rename the podcast.
It's a lie. Don't listen to Cody, everybody.
She was like,
I have a great idea. I know you don't know who Cody is a liar. Just trust me on this. You all know how Cody is. You don't know me, but you can trust me. It's okay. Cody's a liar.
So, Twilight Princess. Kelly was like, hey, you remember Twilight Princess?
Cody,
you know how there's those people in Twilight Princess?
I'm going to edit you out of this podcast, Cody. I swear. I am going to edit you out of this podcast.
So there's people in Twilight Princess, and Kelly was like, hey, what's the name of that group that meets in Thelma's bar? We could name the podcast after them. And we were like, oh yes, The Resistance. The Resistance is a great name for a podcast if you're Bernie Sanders. But maybe not for the Zelda Universe podcast.
Guys, I made a mistake. I made a mistake. I really did, and what is happening right now is that Cody is taking this mistake that had been buried into the earth, and he keeps unearthing it and trying to shove it in my face, and I'm not going to let him get to me. I'm not going to let him get to me, because I have the power to edit him out of the podcast. Just remember that.
So yeah, I'm here with American Idol winner Kelly Clarkson.
That is not my name.
I'm here with American Idol winner Kelly Clarkson, and we've got a great show for you today. We actually have a Zelda announcement. It's not very often that we have a Zelda game announcement. At a recent Nintendo Direct, Link's Awakening was confirmed for a remake for the Nintendo Switch. So that's some exciting news, isn't it, Kelly?
It really is, honestly, because the Zelda franchise has never had a 100% remake, and I think this is something that a lot of people get on board with because Link's Awakening is an older game, and a lot of the younger generation who love The Legend of Zelda haven't played that, or they don't even know what a Game Boy Color is, which is very sad. So having something, this old game that most of the older generation is going to know and love, and now the younger generation is going to learn to love, I think it's going to be really great. I'm really excited for it.
We're going to have some stuff later talking about Link's Awakening, but you'll be hearing it over the course of the next few months, I imagine, because we don't get new Zelda games very often. Zelda Universe isn't going to have much new to discuss apart from this for a while, so look forward to a bunch of Link's Awakening discussion. We also have some news that Reggie Fils-Aimé, president of Nintendo of America, has retired and is being replaced by Doug Bowser, which has made everyone on the internet very happy. Well, they're sad that Reggie's gone, but they're really happy that the president of Nintendo is called Bowser. So the Twitter comedians are out in force at the moment making Bowser jokes. I don't know if it will last as long as the Nintendo Wii jokes lasted after that name got announced, but, you know, we'll see. So we've got a good show lined up for you today. I'll give you a bit of a rundown. First up, we're going to have a Link's Awakening remake segment from Brian. And then we're going to get some ZU updates from Anne. And then Hyrule Away from Hyrule by Randy. He's going to talk about Zelda fashion in other games. Then we've got community news by Realm Wing, our youngest contributor at the moment. And we've got a Chugga Conroy interview. The great interviewer Cody is in fact there to interview Chugga Conroy, so I think that would be a great time. After that, we have Realm Wings once again. Realm Wings is back. You may have missed him for like the 10 minutes in between, but don't worry, he's back for a new segment on Spirit Tracks. Is it the worst Zelda game of all time? We'll find out. And then that'll be the end of the episode, and we'll roll with some credits and perhaps some bloopers.
I cannot confirm nor deny there will be bloopers.
I'm going to get the editor to go and add in some bloopers, so it should be good.
The editor, you mean me?
You know, the editor's always good for telling her to do some things, and she'll be like, oh, okay, I'm from America. Yeah, good times. Do you like my impression?
I'm going to edit you out of this podcast.
I will edit you out of this podcast.
You know, I don't know, for our lovely listeners, I don't know which would be more preferable. Should I edit Cody out of the podcast, or should I edit myself out of the podcast? So then you just get random ramblings of Cody.
Look, Random Ramblings of Cody is in fact a very popular podcast segment, so that's what's happening. Let's head over to our first segment about Link's Awakening. Thanks, Brian.
A minute and 36 seconds. That's how long I was awestruck and smiling like a goofball during the end of Nintendo's latest Direct. For those of you that aren't aware, Nintendo held a Direct on February 13th, 2019, that showed off a bunch of amazing new games, but none of them compared to the grand finale. The trailer started off with a ship sailing on a dark and stormy night, waves crashing up against the boat, and the camera pans to our hero, Link, who's trying to hold together the ship from capsizing, when suddenly, a lightning bolt crashes down onto the ship and the screen fades to white. Then, we see the iconic Windfish's Egg atop Mount Tama Ranch and the music starts to play. Finally, a title appears and we officially confirm that a remake of Link's Awakening is coming to the Nintendo Switch later in 2019. We're introduced to the gorgeous new art style that looks like if A Link Between Worlds was actually created by Disney and Pixar, and all of the familiar locales around Mabe's Village. So much has remained the same, and it seems like this remake is going to stay true to the original while feeling new and refreshing. Some eagle-eyed viewers would have seen that the shield Link is carrying in the trailer is more akin to the Hylian shield rather than the shield from the original. While I welcome the new changes that Nintendo are creating, there are a few things from the original that I wish to see in the remake. Now, this may be a given considering the Nintendo Switch's technology and the limitations of the Game Boy, but I would love to see an updated user interface. Who wouldn't like to have more than just two items equipped at a time, and items such as the power bracelet to always be equipped rather than having to switch it out, put it to B, switch that back over to the sword. Let's just have the power bracelet B attached to the R button. It's just always there, Link can always carry and pick up the rocks that he needs to. Let's get rid of the cumbersome switching between items back and forth. Another possible given, but I wanted to see it anyways, is that I hope Nintendo keeps the dungeon design the same as the original game. The layouts of the dungeons can be a little obtuse and it adds a certain layer of difficulty to the game that would be lost if there were signs or hints showing you exactly where to go. Having to circle around the same areas, trying to figure out which wall you need to bomb, adds a little bit of exploration to Link's Awakening. And this is especially true in Eagle Tower later in the game, with the iron ball that you're carrying around in the pillars. For those of you that have played the original, understand exactly what I am talking about. And for those of you that haven't, well, good luck. Speaking of dungeons, why not include the color dungeon from Link's Awakening DX? That's right, this isn't the first remake for Link's Awakening. Back in 1998, Nintendo re-released Link's Awakening for the Game Boy Color that included a, quote, fully, unquote, colored world and the inclusion of a few additions not seen in the original Link's Awakening. The Color Dungeon was a completely optional dungeon that rewarded players with new garbs for those brave enough to complete it. Players got the option of the red clothes, which doubled your attack power, or the blue clothes, which halved your damage taken. However, you were only allowed to take one at a time, and if you wanted to switch them, you needed to replay the entire dungeon to switch from the red to blue or vice versa. Unfortunately, you were never allowed to go back to the green clothes once you picked the red or the blue. So, in the Switch remake, I hope to see the inclusion of the color dungeon and the option to switch between the green, red, and blue clothes on the fly. So that way you don't have to keep going back and forth, recompleting the whole dungeon just to switch it out. Another addition in Link's Awakening DX was the addition of the camera shop and photographs that you could collect around the world. Similar to the memories in Breath of the Wild, these photos are scattered throughout the world and players could collect them and actually printed them out if they connected a Game Boy camera printer to their Game Boy Color. It would be amazing to see these photos recreated in either the anime art style of the trailer or the new art style of the game itself. However, I would love to see a vintage filter that would allow players to see the original photos the way that they appeared in Link's Awakening DX back in 1998, along with the new art style. Apparently, Link had a lot of things to collect around Koholint Island, because the next thing that I hope makes it onto the remake is the seashell collecting. The secret seashells are hidden throughout the island, and legend says that something good is bound to happen to those who find enough of them. And I don't want to spoil anything here, so without spoiling it, believe me, you want to collect these things. There are a total of 26 seashells on the island, but 3 of them are actually time-sensitive, and you can miss them completely. Fortunately for us, you only need 20 in order to find out what that something good entails, but I would love to see that the collecting of the seashells, and I would actually like to see the 3 missing time-sensitive ones to be removed from the game, so that way completionists can collect all 26 and not have to do a replay the entire game, so that way they collect all 26 shells. You'll find these shells hidden underneath rocks or in the bushes, or sometimes you'll actually have to do a certain quest in order to find a seashell, but these are all great little side quests that I would love to see in the remake that not only appeared in Link's Awakening DX, but also the very original one, Link's Awakening. And my final hope wouldn't exactly be seen in this remake, but I wanted to include it anyways because I'm just so freaking excited about this game. Since we are already seeing a new 2D Zelda engine, why not use this resource in order to remake Oracle of Ages and Seasons as well? The original two games used the same engine as Link's Awakening DX, so wouldn't it be a smart move for Nintendo to recreate those two games as well? That's right, yeah, I know you agreed with me. I know that I would buy them again, and I can't imagine there being any issue with licensing since Capcom has allowed Nintendo to re-release them on the eShop a few years back. Now, some of you may be unaware, but there was originally supposed to be 3 games in the Oracle series, but the 3rd game, codenamed Mystical Seed of Wisdom, never saw the light of day, and never actually progressed past the point of the codename. And I know, I get it, this is a complete far-shot dream, but I would much rather see the release date of the 3rd game over the remake of Oracle of Ages and Seasons. And I know, some of you may be saying that this is treason of the highest order, and I should be imprisoned for even thinking it. But honestly, I would much rather the 3rd game to finally be made instead of Oracle of Ages and Seasons, which I would love too, don't get me wrong. But I just really wanted to see what Nintendo had in store for us. It would be similar to Star Fox 2 coming out on the SNES Classic. 20 years later, this would be perfect for us to get a unreleased, unfinished game using the same engine as Link's Awakening Remake for the Nintendo Switch. So, without any further ado, that's it for my rantings and ravings about Link's Awakening and what I'd like to see from the originals to make the final cut for the remake. Again, this game is slated for 2019 on the Nintendo Switch. It's so close. It's so close. But it's still crazy to me to think that a minute and 36 seconds can bring you back 20 years and allow you to relive all of those great memories. I can't wait to do it again.
Thanks, Brian. I personally agree on Oracle of Ages and Seasons getting a remake because I honestly never got to finish those games. I lost the cartridge when I was but a young lad and never rebought them. And same, honestly, goes for Link's Awakening. I never beat it, so no spoilers, please.
That's a good point. Oracle of Ages and Oracle of Seasons, very good Zelda games. You can dig a lot of holes with that shovel.
Yep.
Which is just, it's just fun on its own. Like, just forget about progress. Just dig all the holes on a screen, leave the screen, come back. The screen's empty for you to dig some holes once again.
Yeah, I definitely did that when I was a kid. I would literally start from one corner, go up, and then back down, and then back up, and then back down, and just dig every single plot of land that I possibly could dig. And then I would leave the screen, and then I'd come back, and I'd be like, darn, somebody filled all these holes. I guess I should just dig holes again. So that's how I spent my younger years. And, you know, people wonder why I never finished those games. It was probably because of that.
Look, Link's Awakening, it's gonna be good. Speaking of things that are gonna be good, here's Anne to tell us about good things. Do you like my segue?
No!
Oh, you do a segue then. Go ahead. Go.
Well, I mean, I was going to say something along the lines that Link's Awakening was going to be a great update to the series. And then, speaking of updates, here's Anne to tell us about the latest Zelda Universe updates.
That's a good segue, too.
I think that one's better.
Welcome to ZU Updates. I'm the Zelda Anne, or just Anne for short, and I'm here to bring you some exciting news. First off, ZU is holding an Ocarina of Time 20th anniversary panel at PAX East at the end of March. I remember when I was a young girl playing this game, and I still can't believe that it is 20 years old. Time does fly when you're having fun, especially playing something as fantastic as Ocarina of Time. As for our Twitch team, we gave a warm welcome to Joshua Lindquist, who launched his new show, The Adventure of Joshua. He plays adventure games, both Zelda and otherwise. He started with a classic, A Link to the Past. Streams are live Wednesday nights at 8 p.m. Pacific time. If you are wanting some fun and laughs, I highly recommend coming and watching him. In honor of ZU friend Chugga Conroy's new Phantom Hourglass Let's Play, ZU's Columns team dedicated the week of February 11th to this game. He will be interviewed by Cody later in this podcast episode. I am Anne, and that's all the news we have at this time. We'll see you next time here on ZU Updates, where the Triforce continually shines.
Thanks, Anne. Hey, Cody.
Hello.
Question for you. Have you ever dressed your character up as Link or Zelda in any video game?
Well, the Wii U version of Bayonetta, and it might be on the Switch as well, I haven't played that version, got a bunch of options for Nintendo characters, Peach or Mario or Link, and they all look very strange because Bayonetta has body proportions that are not human.
Yeah, they're not very realistic.
Her legs are like 8 times the height of her torso. Yeah, it's fun times, but I did a little bit of that, maybe a bit of World of Warcraft or whatever, getting some characters that, you know, some matching designs that look similar. What about you?
Well, honestly, I don't really have very many games where I can dress my character up in, like, specific clothing, I guess I would say, other than, like, what the game provided. But I'm actually going to be getting Skyrim for my Switch, and I'll probably buy the Link skin. I'm going to Japan in April, and I have a 16-hour flight. So I decided I could either play Dark Souls and torment everybody on the plane because I rage at video games, or I could play Skyrim and go on a fun adventure and hopefully not bother anybody on this 16-hour plane ride. So I chose that.
That does sound like a good choice, though that would be pretty good on the 16-hour plane ride to be woken up by someone who threw their Switch at the wall.
Well, I could imagine, because I'm going to be honest, I rage hard at video games if I am not doing well, because I always blame myself. It's not the game that's doing the wrong, it is me that is doing the
wrong.
You're
the wrong.
I am the wrong. So I would probably scream, I'd probably bang my head against the table or the chair. I would also have noise-canceling headphones on, so I'd be completely unaware to the people around me, and I would probably be disrupting them very gratefully, and we'd probably have to make an emergency landing so I could get off the plane in handcuffs. And I'd really, really like to enjoy my vacation in Japan, so I decided against it.
We had problems with New Super Mario Bros. For the Wii, and it was not allowed as a multiplayer game for a while there because some people got real mad about who was stealing other people's mushrooms or throwing people off of ledges and things. I don't know why.
You know, any multiplayer game where you can pick up your friend and throw him off a ledge is a great game.
Except for Triforce Heroes. Speaking of games in which you can dress up as Link, here is a segue to a segment from Randy.
Not a good segue, Cody. Not a good segue.
Okay, hold on, let me try again. Skyrim and Bayonetta are just a few of the games where you can dress up as Link. Segue. Randy's gonna do a segment about Zelda fashion.
Alright. Let's go with that. That's probably the best one I'm gonna get out of you.
Segue!
Hello, and thank you for joining me on the podcast today. I'm Randy, and this is my segment, Hyrule Away From Home, where I like to talk about The Legend of Zelda and how it kind of weasels its way into other games and how other games take influence from it. In more literal terms, less just kind of influence and more just direct reference. Today we'll be talking about that Hyrule Haute Couture, the fashion of Hyrule, and kind of how you can see that in other games. I don't know about you, but I consider myself the sort of video game fashionista. I love taking my game characters and putting on my own little fashion show. Even in Zelda games, fashion has been an oddly important mechanic. Different colored outfits change your abilities, masks give you strange and new powers, and one time, your hat was the sidekick. It's a secret to no one that dressing up characters as my favorite Zelda cast is a big go-to for me in other games. Breath of the Wild actually gave me the best between worlds, letting me dress my Link up in varied costumes. You can either find me preparing for the harsh climates of Gerudo Valley, or donning my outfits of my favorite Zelda characters and capital H heroes. Hyrule Warriors, it should be noted, was one of the first games to offer Link and friends a whole wardrobe to spruce up their outfits, not conferring any kind of abilities. They even added a fairy companion system where you could swap outfits on and out, and those did get little ability buffs, but more on all that some other time. So, do you want to strut your style savvy with your favorite Zelda clothing in other games? If so, then take these fashion judgments to heart, because we're going to look at that sweet Hyrule Haute Couture and how other games wear it. Miis have proven very flexible with outfits and costumes. You can dress up as Link and friends in a variety of games, like Street Pass Plaza, Miitopia, Nintendo Land, Mario Kart 8, and even Smash Bros. It should come as no surprise how much this feature works for someone like me. It's great being able to make yourself into a new hero or Zelda incarnation and fight it out with the real deal. Or if you're like me, you'll maybe make these twisted, unnerving doppelgangers of the actual characters, meant solely to be defeated lest they replace the true characters forevermore. Dressing up is incredibly fun, but sometimes it's too difficult to pick any one favorite outfit to go with. Mario Kart 8 has some seemingly random amiibo unlocks, and you can unlock them based on who you scan. Link, of course, is one of the available costumes. He snags you a sweet racer suit for your Mii. And honestly, this one's a little bit less well put together than others. It tries to give you this kind of, I'm the hero, but also I'm in a racing track suit. And, you know, it's got the standard Ocarina of Time Link colors, the very vivid green and the white kind of pant legs over the full racing suit. So it's not quite as skin tight in some places. But the helmet it's just this green with like this weird yellow fire design, and it's easily one of the weakest of all the unlockable amiibo costumes in Mario Kart 8, honestly. And honestly, you can just be Link. Both two Links, Champion Link or classic Skyward Sword Link. And Animal Crossing has evolved in costuming over its iterations, and in Animal Crossing New Leaf, you have more options than ever. You can collect complete heroes' outfits, some neat side character masks, and accompanying furniture. For a game with such a huge focus on fashion, it is sometimes difficult to put together a full outfit based on your favorite character. So unless you're okay with wearing Majora's Mask with your best pink shoes and turnip shirt, well, your hero outfit was the only way to go. That was until the Welcome Amiibo update. Thanks to new visitors like Epona, Wolf Link, and Ganon, there's a whole bunch of new home decor and outfits to purchase. Epona will sell you saddle-themed leather tank top. Ganon will sell you his ocarina-styled Ganondorf clothing since he's too big and blue to wear them anymore. There's new outfits for Sheik, Zelda, and even Medley, whose shirt goes really great with the beak accessory. The Hero of the Wild and Between Worlds shipped some outfits of their own. Heck, even Wolf Link will send you a shirt based on his own fur pattern. All in all, the update brought a ton of amazing Zelda content to a game that I thought I was done playing. It's exciting to see what more we might see in the upcoming Animal Crossing for Switch. In Super Mario Maker, any of the Zelda amiibo up through Wolf Link would score you an exclusive 8-bit costume to use in the original Mario Brothers levels. These could be randomly acquired through playing the 100-man Mario as well, amongst all the other costumes, of which there were over 100. The outfits work really well, actually. Setting this mystery mushroom to one of the Zelda-inspired costumes gives you this kind of whole little fanfare when you acquire it based on which character you are. It also unlocks a little bit music snippets, item noises, stuff like that. And it looks good. You know, it's running in the old NES Mario levels. It's just fun. It kind of reminds you of like old Flash projects or something like you might have seen online. And honestly, there really wasn't a bad one of these costumes in the bunch, even for Wolf Link and Midna, who technically never were 8-bit. Like, they still just kind of fit well enough. Also, people could make their own levels tailored to each of these characters. You know, I've seen swimming levels with Link, which looks kind of funny, but then you see him dive into a dungeon, you know, go in the underground, stuff like that. It's really just neat looking the whole time. Mario Odyssey, by the way, supported a fun dress-up mechanic. Didn't really confer any bonuses, but it was just really fun, you know, dressing up the Mario however you want. Supposedly, at one time, there was a file dedicated to a Link costume somewhere in the Mario Odyssey data. However, that outfit never got pushed live, so we really haven't seen if and when that's ever going to happen, but honestly, even just the idea of it kind of makes sense. Like, there should have been more costumes you can wear based on various Nintendo characters. And if you want to make them all amiibo unlocks, that's fine. They're just costumes. They don't do anything. But, you know, regardless, I'd love to see him walking around as Kirby or Sheik or Zelda. You know, he already wore the wedding dress for Peach. So hopefully next time we'll see a little bit more of a fashion line for our favorite Dopey Plumber. In the 3DS sleeper hit Style Savvy, any Zelda series amiibo unlocks a Triforce pattern and a Champion's Tunic shirt. Tunic can be colored however you want, a feature sadly missing from Breath of the Wild. Maybe now you'll go back and check out that portable fashion show? Arguably, unlocking costumes is the best use of amiibo to date. In Miitopia, any Link, Ganon, Zelda, or Sheik amiibo will give you corresponding outfits to dress you and your friends to wear around the goofy fantasy world. In Kirby Robobot, you can equip Kirby with specific copy abilities corresponding to each Zelda character. Now, Link gives you the sword ability, Ganon gives you poison, and such and such. There's no special costume part for these, per se, although a sword copy ability obviously is inspired by Link's hat. But it is kind of unfortunate, because if you have the Kirby-specific series amiibo, and you scan them in to get an ability, their ability comes with a full costume. You know, hammer ability where you look like Day-Day-Day, stuff like that. So, would have been kind of cool to see more of that, but overall, it's still just a cool idea that you can just scan Nintendo characters and get relatively similar powers. Nintendo games aren't the only place to hang out in your hero duds. In Bayonetta, one of the exclusive costumes for our favorite Angel Slayer is designed after the hero's tunic. In an interesting historical note that seems hilariously backwards, Platinum Games originally submitted a fairly conservative outfit for Bayonetta. This is likely because most people in the industry are aware of Nintendo's general avoidance of risque outfits. So even though Platinum and Bayonetta are known for very sexually aware outfits, they decided to play it safe when talking to Nintendo. However, it was Nintendo themselves who sent back a redesign featuring more skin and open clothing with a note that basically said, "Sexier, please." And sexier it was. In Fatal Frame, made another Black Water for the Wii U, there was an interesting, if not super obvious, mechanic where the more the main character was wet, the stronger their power was. It was tied to a water. Of course, this meant risque clothing and all wet and pretty looking, I guess, but it did come at the cost of lower defense. Sure. Some of the outfits were apparently deemed too steamy for Nintendo of America. Upon localizing it, a couple of those costumes were completely removed and swapped out in favor of Zero Suit Samus's blue spandex and Princess Zelda's dress. I will say, Twilight Princess's dark, brooding atmosphere has nothing on sporting that regal gown in the waterlogged, ghost-infested ruins of Fatal Frame. One of Japan's biggest franchises, Monster Hunter, has seen plenty of Zelda love on 3DS and Switch. It comes in the form of exclusive quests to unlock pieces of armor and weapons designed after our hero in green. Somehow, it always just kind of looked natural in the Monster Hunter setting. It just fits so well. It's honestly a surprise we haven't seen anything come kind of back towards Zelda from that world. Let's face it, Link in the Rathalos armor would have been a heck of a spectacle to watch in Breath of the Wild. You know, now that I'm thinking about it, we got that Xenoblade Chronicles 2 Rex costume in Breath of the Wild, but nothing ever went back to him. That seems like a missed opportunity, but yeah. Some other interesting appearances include a Japan-only One Piece game, where various Nintendo character costumes can be unlocked with specific amiibos. The character Rorona Zoro gets a Link costume befitting of his sword-slinging style. Diablo 3, recently released for the Switch, has an exclusive Ganondorf outfit that you can apply to any of your gear you're currently wearing thanks to the game's transmogrification system. Basically, you can make your armor look like whatever the better armor you have ever worn is. It seems kind of weird for one of the heroes to be dressed like Ganondorf and Lady Ganondorf respectively, but when they are dressed that way, you can kind of give it a little more interesting evil is triumphed by way more evil spin. And finally, Skyrim Remastered for Switch features a Champion of the Wild outfit, with accompanying sword and bow. The idea is great, but the contrast of the vivid Breath of the Wild colors and the more gritty, drab world of Skyrim just don't quite mesh as well as you'd hope. Of course, video games don't have to be the only place to show off your favorite Zelda gear. ThinkGeek.com has some amazing Zelda-inspired outfits, especially from Breath of the Wild. You can get a hat based on Daruk, there's a scarf based on Revali, and just all sorts of really nice pieces of clothing that, honestly, if you didn't know Breath of the Wild, you probably wouldn't know they were video game related, and that's always kind of my preference and style. You know, I always hate just having, like, the logo emblazoned on a t-shirt. It's less fun. You can also find costume weapons and toys to sort of fill in the gaps, like Breath of the Wild, Link's bow and arrow, and other things like that. Of course, Amazon and Party City USA also have some costumes for the Legend of Zelda series, and those are, let's say, of varying quality. While we still wait for the Hero of Style, we'll probably have to stay happy with more costumes and dress-up mechanics like we saw in Triforce Heroes. Someday, Ganondorf, Zelda, and the Hero will have to duke it out on the runway to earn their pieces of the Triforce. But until that day, let us revel in our green threads across worlds, physical and digital. Get out there and strut your love of Zelda for the whole world to see.
Thanks, Randy. So, Kelly.
Hello.
Do you think Zelda games will keep getting remakes with Link's Awakening? What should be next in the remake list?
That's kind of a loaded question because everybody likes their own Zelda games. Like I said before, Oracle of Seasons, Oracle of Ages, that would be awesome to get a remake with them, especially if they want to keep going with the same cute little style that Link's Awakening looks like it's going to go. They look like little clay figures, and it's almost like a stop-motion game. It's super cute. I really, really appreciate it. I mean, I could honestly say I'd even enjoy seeing a Skyward Sword remake, not necessarily with the graphics, because I think the graphics are fine. I think it's a beautiful game. I just honestly don't like the motion controls, and I think a lot more people will enjoy that game if it didn't have motion controls.
Yeah, the Skyward Sword, I think, is... it's next in line in the sense that Ocarina of Time, Majora's Mask, Wind Waker, and Twilight Princess have all had remakes or remasters or whatever.
HD versions.
Or HD versions or 3DS versions. Yeah, so Skyward Sword would be next on that list. And aside from that, Zelda 2 would need a proper remake so that it wouldn't be bad. Let's be honest here.
Is there such thing as a bad Zelda game?
Aside from, like, Twilight Princess, not really. If you have problems with...
Excuse me?
What I just said, you can write feedback podcast at ZeldaUniverse.net.
They're all going to be feedbacks from me saying how Cody is very wrong.
Twilight Princess is like Zelda for babies.
Do you think Wand of Gamelon should be remastered or remade?
Yeah.
Or the Faces of Evil?
I mean, I think they just need to be re-released. I think they're pretty much perfect. I don't think there's any improvements that could be made to them.
There's absolutely nothing wrong with that. They're just straight gold. I don't know why people don't play them anymore.
Yeah, well, aside from the fact it will cost them like $1,000 to get a working Philips CDI, I just hope that the CDI games will get a proper re-release alongside the Zelda cartoon.
Yeah, that would be great, wouldn't it?
Yeah. Well, excuse me, Kelly.
How did I know you were gonna say that?
Well, excuse me, Kelly.
I'm editing you out of the podcast.
Anyway, here's the community news.
Hello, Zelda Universe. Even if you're not a member of ZU yet, I'm lumping you in with everyone who is because you will be a ZUer when my crusade for ZU arrives in your hometown and forces you to sign up. Now that that piece of surprising news is out of the way, I'm Realm, and it's time to take a look at what's hip and happening in the ZU forums. It's the community news. The Winter 2018 Awards have officially wrapped up, and Lady Sunshine is currently seeking feedback on how you think it went. She has a designated thread for that kind of thing in Community Central. So, if you had a problem with the voting phase being given to the mods, the smaller number of rewards, etc., or if you liked that stuff, please voice your opinions, they will be taken into account for the next award season. And thanks to all who participated in the Winter Awards, and congratulations to all the winners. If you missed the results, they're in the Community Awards board. Former Overlord over the Roleplay Guild and Eternal Overlord over Digimon, Ruki is February's Z-Wer of the Month. Our community has some really great things to say about Ruki, so let's take a gander at a couple of those things, shall we? Former ZU Forums administrator, and former ZU cast host and dictator Malia says, albeit uncensored, "She's one of my best friends, and for very good reason. She's loyal, kind, generous, fierce, understanding, beautiful, take a no bull shabby, easy to talk to, fun to gossip with, super fun to have a spalty spite banana, talks with XD, and overall just a really talented and driven sweetheart whom I look to very often for support and love and friendship. You know, she and I have been D&Ding together for what, 4 years? Maybe 5 soon? By all rights, we should be sick of each other, but we're not. We still ping each other and gossip and share ideas and get carried away in our fantasy world of Dungeons & Dragons. Because she's the best goddamn rogue, and I'm her Tinkerer Yee Boy. Life lesson. When you and another person can survive the apocalypse of a terrible, awful, unworthy dungeon master and a fake asteroid friend, you know you're gonna be BFFs forever. All in all, I Feng Shui love her so much. Leah, such foul typing fingers, but such kind words." Current RPG mod Sayobam says, Ruki is awesome. She put up with me during my cringy noob phase, which honestly hasn't quite ended, and has been very helpful in RPG even after retirement. She's been very patient with me as I've tried to get the hang of modding, and seeing these comments reminds me that I still have a long way to go. She definitely deserves this. Thanks for everything, Ruki. Indeed, many members expressed their appreciation for Ruki's time as forum staff, and while I haven't had the pleasure of talking with her much myself, I feel safe in agreeing with that sentiment wholeheartedly. We here at the ZUBC hope that you've had a wonderful month, Ruki, and we look forward to seeing more of your RPs. Speaking of former staff, it is with a heavy heart that I inform you that ZU's resident turtle, JP the Neurotic, has stepped down from his post as mod of General Gaming. He's still crawling around on the forums, though, so please watch your step and do not let him fall onto his back. Our Zelda section remains active, probably because Zelda isn't the site name and people assume it's important. The recent announcement of a Link's Awakening remake for the Nintendo Switch immediately spawned a thread dedicated to discussion of the new-ish game in modern Zelda. If you want to complain about the art style like a boring person, that's the place to do it. Also in modern Zelda, new member the Ginger has revived an effort to determine both the in-game and real-world equivalent recipes for the Gyarados much-talked-about Noble Pursuit beverage from Breath of the Wild. While I am personally not yet of legal drinking age in my native USA, I am intrigued by this thread, and I recommend that everyone try and join in this real-world quest for a mythical drink. Over in theorizing, ZU veteran GameToss continues to debunk the absurd Zelda theories plastered all over YouTube in his thread, GameToss and Friends vs. YouTube. If you yourself have ever gone near those YouTube theories, you'll want to stop off in GameToss's thread and cleanse yourself. And if you are a Zelda theorist yourself, feel free to jump in on the debunking action. Two special events are underway in Community Central as of reporting. The first is the third ZU Fitness Challenge, which provides interested participants with rotating lists of daily rules and routines for improving one's overall health and well-being. The challenge is non-competitive and highly rewarding, so even if you aren't signed up, feel free to take the call and improve yourself today. The event officially runs until March 2nd, although the weekly list will continue to be available for your reference. The other special event is the second annual Guess That ZUer game. The 15 participants each submitted one fact about themselves, and then they must match the fact to the participant. There are two rounds of guessing. After the first one, Lady Sunshine provides the participants' initial score, which they can use to modify their guesses at their own peril. The event actually ended a few days ago, but I thought you should know that it happened because it looks like a blast. Congratulations to RPG veterans and funny people Siraton and Sacred Sturgeon for winning the first ever roleplay creative corner tournament with their interesting RP about an angel and a pirate on a quest to steal some treasure. Speaking of the creative corner, the January/February writing contest is currently finishing up. The theme, as reported last episode, is Hidden Beneath the Ocean, so if it's still February, get your votes in. And, if you are a visual artist, you might still have time to enter the January/February Visual Art Contest, whose theme is Your Average Day. Visit the Creative Corner for more information and or to get involved. I think I've been talking for a while now, but I can't leave you without mentioning another victim of Cody's machinations, Goron Mario, better known as Solicitor. For a couple of hours on February 12th, Cody changed Goron Mario's name to I Love the End of Eras But Not Camels. I think it's best that we not question Cody's apparent camel obsession, but we must stand up for our username rights. Actually, I gotta go now. I have a feeling Cody just changed my name to Camel Wings or something. I'm Realm Wings, and this has been your Zelda Universe Community News. If you have any news you want me to report, let either myself or Ezlo Spirit know. And I'll see you later in this podcast episode for some serious Spirit Tracks talk. Bye for now!
Thanks, resident 14-year-old Realm Wings, the very young person who is very young.
So Cody, I heard you recently interviewed a very special guest and friend of yours. Tell me more about that.
That's right, I interviewed special guest and friend of the site, Chugga A. Conroy, a popular YouTuber with 1.2 million subscribers. He likes to do Nintendo games. Currently he's doing a Let's Play of Phantom Hourglass. And here is Chugga Conroy. Hello everybody and welcome to the Cody Zone. My name's Cody and I'm here with Chugga Conroy.
Well, you actually remember my second A.
That's right, it's Chugga A. Conroy is his name. I understand you got it from like a random name generator or something.
Yeah, when I was 8 years old and I had no idea that it would end up, you know, following me this long.
Was that, what were you playing, like Habbo Hotel or Neopets or RuneScape or something? What's this from?
CartoonNetwork.com.
CartoonNetwork.com.
Yep.
Well, there you go. If you want to get a good name, go to CartoonNetwork.com, and you too may be the next Chugga A. Conroy.
Everyone always forgets my second A, though. I don't know how good of a username it really is.
Yeah, well, what does the middle name stand for? What's the middle A stand for?
I've never actually canonically stated that. I just realized.
Ooh.
Never made that officially canon.
Exclusive interview right here. What is the A in Chugga A. Conroy?
I don't know, but it might be the most neglected A of all time, even more so than the A that goes before Game of Thrones.
Well, it's a mystery. You can leave your ideas.
A mystery.
Yeah. because it's got the letter A in it. Welcome, everybody. This is Chugga Conroy.
Hi.
Chugga A. Conroy.
Hello.
And I'm here to interview him, in fact, because this is someone you may have heard of, because he has not one follower on YouTube, not two followers. Not three, I'm not going to count this all the way up to 1.2 million, but 1.2 million followers on YouTube right now. So, Chugga A. Conroy, who are you?
Who am I? What an existential question. Okay. Yeah, I make Let's Play videos on YouTube, do all sorts of Nintendo games, and, yeah, I've done a few Zelda games before as well, and I'm just really a big fan of a lot of different game series.
So you do Let's Plays is your main thing that you do. You've been branching off into a few other things like panels and at conventions and this kind of thing, but the main thing you do is Let's Plays.
Yeah, we do a live game show at different conventions. We also have our charity event, the Coliseum, which happened for the first time this year with the Zeldathon people.
Ooh.
And yeah, we just kind of make internet videos of people talking about video games. That's kind of the most general sense that I can describe it as, because our game show is also video game themed.
And so something that I've always been interested in is that you're really big into YouTube, but you've never really moved into this Twitch space, really, even though it's the most, for a lot of gaming channels, it's sort of taken over as the main type of gaming content. Is there a reason for that? Do you just like prefer certain things about doing it, you know, the old way?
Well, personally, I think first and foremost, I'm an editor. That's what I enjoy doing. I know that a lot of people don't, but I enjoy the process of editing, and I like making produced videos, which isn't really what Twitch is for. But it's kind of funny that we're talking about this right now, because one of the reasons why I had never used Twitch, like, ever, was because my username was already taken. I had the roughest time getting a hold of my username, where every time I tried getting in touch with them or seeing if I could get somebody to hand it over, it would just end in failure every time. But eventually, finally, recently, my username was actually switched back over to me, so I have it now. I haven't decided if I'm going to do anything with it or when, but that's the main reason why I haven't really used Twitch, was just not having my username, and any attempts to get it were just not working.
And you didn't want to switch your middle name? You didn't want to be Chugga B. Conroy or anything?
That might have been such a good idea, and I didn't think of it.
So, how did you get involved with Zelda Universe, and when was that?
Well, I'd been a user of Zelda Universe since before making videos. I used it as a resource, and it's been around since 2003, I'm wanting to say?
The site's been around since, well, about 2001 or 2002, but it sort of took off a few years after that.
Yeah, I'd been a user, maybe not like an active user though, but I'd lurked and used it as a resource plenty of times, and read threads there as well, some of the articles and theories that have been presented, which I think has always been one of the site's strong suits and where it has a lot of its roots. And when I was getting ready to make my first Zelda videos, when I was, you know, just starting out, I went onto the forums and I found you as the administrator who was online at the time, and I messaged you asking if I could have some help planning things out from an expert, and immediately you were just all, the rest is history, I guess. Now you're, Your accolades have been very interesting to follow since that day, because I had no idea what kind of life that I was getting involved in at that stage.
Yeah, they call it the Cody Zone.
Everything that you just... You have some kind of... For those of you that have followed Cody since the early days of Zelda Universe having a YouTube channel, or even before that, Cody Davies is like the Kramer of the internet, I think, where he has some kind of wacky scheme that, like, nobody thinks will ever work, where it's like, one week it's like, I'm gonna be a reality TV show star, and then the next week, oh, I'm gonna get elected to Congress, and, like, you have no idea, like, where he's getting these ideas, and yet they all just kind of work out for him somehow.
Yeah, look, that's a great title, the Kramer of the internet. It's almost as good as the one YouTube comment that I'll treasure forever that said, you're the Jay-Z of Minecraft, which, look, it's just, I want to frame that on my wall, that I'm the Jay-Z of Minecraft. I don't know what it means, but it's real good. So, yeah, like, we've known each other since, like, when did you do that Wind Waker Let's Play?
That was 2009, I think, end of 2009.
2009, so it's your longest ongoing Let's Play that you haven't finished, is it?
I think it might actually be the most overdue bonus video. For those that don't know, one of my things is a lot of my early series, I promised bonus videos where I'm like, okay, we'll go over all these topics that we never have, and then I never did that, and even though I've been perfectly fine with doing bonus videos for the last 5 or 6 years, people still love telling me I'm awful at bonus videos.
Yeah, it's great times. You got a few bonus videos around, because you've done five Zelda games on your channel. Wind Waker, Majora's Mask, Link's Awakening, Skyward Sword, and Okami. And you've got a few bonus videos between Wind Waker. I think Okami still has some, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does, and ouch, nobody remembers Okami Den, but okay.
Oh, I guess. Okay, I'll count Okami Den.
Half a Zelda game.
It's half a Zelda game. Speaking of your Zelda Let's Plays, like, what are your thoughts on them now? Are there any that are sort of, like, a favorite that you think you did real well, or ones that you sort of think that, you know, maybe you could have done better, or anything like that?
I'll say straight up, nobody likes their own early videos, and Wind Waker is kind of in that zone for me. It feels like that line of what counts as early videos just keeps moving forward and forward and forward as time goes by.
I mean,
by.
My definition of early videos, I think, is before the limit switched from 11 minutes. It's probably my definition of your early videos.
Wind Waker was 11 minutes, so...
Do you feel like that impacted on your Wind Waker Let's Play? Because I know you redid your Earthbound one feeling that you skipped a bunch of content because you didn't like the 11-minute limit.
Yeah, I had to kind of rush through like a speedrun and didn't really get to show a lot of things or stop and smell the roses, and that's kind of what that game is. But yeah, Wind Waker was definitely in that early period. Let's see. I think Skyward Sword was very fun to do. It was really, really fun just showing the characters to people and... You know, I guess just kind of exploring the world, telling the story, and, you know, exploring the side plots, because I really tried to work in a lot of minor NPC dialogue of, you know, what's going on in these people's lives and trying to give everybody, you know, the spotlight as much as I could, because that game, I think, definitely excels in its characters and side quests. I will say that I admittedly, like, I guess beyond the era that I consider early videos, I'm not that big of a fan of my Link's Awakening videos, actually. I don't think that it was really that good of a fit for me in the end, but... I don't know, I guess some people liked it.
Yeah, well, I think it's interesting. I mean, thematically, it's similar to Majora's Mask in a lot of ways, so I think there's interesting stuff to cover there, but do you feel like do you have a general distinction between, like, your, you know, like, your 3D videos and 2D game videos, or early, like, games from before the 2000 and after, or anything like that? Like, is there any particular, like, era that you think, oh, I do well in these kinds of games?
I feel like more often than not, it's the story-driven games that tend to work better for me. Maybe I just get really into, like, telling the story. Maybe I get really into re-experiencing the story myself. I'm not really sure why, but it's something that I have noticed with time is that I tend to do better with more story-driven experiences.
So, do you think that Skyward Sword, since your Let's Play of it, I think Breath of the Wild was released after your Let's Play of it, was it? Or was it around the same time?
It was in the middle. Yeah, I was about two-thirds done with the game, and then Breath of the Wild was released. It's kind of funny. I came off recording one night, and then I got an email from Nintendo that, you know, it's completely unexpected. And it's like, hi, just to confirm, you are okay with receiving a Nintendo Switch and Breath of the Wild tomorrow? And I'm like, excuse me? And, like, this was over a month before the Switch was even going to be released, and there was no hint that they were going to do this before. So when they said that, I'm just like, all right. And then I responded back to that email, and I'm like, I mean, yes, if that's what you intend, I can definitely accept that, and, you know, I'd be happy to. And they're just like, okay, you know, thank you for, like, all you do, and, like, thank you for, you know, representing our games on YouTube and all that. And I'm just like, all right, thank you. And I was just, like, so over the moon that, like, Nintendo had emailed me about something like that I went back and recorded, like, 5 more videos with the newfound energy I had.
So do you feel like that changed... the release of Breath of the Wild changed your views on Skyward Sword at all? Was there anything that, like, your perspective on Skyward Sword changed during the Let's Play because Breath of the Wild had come out?
I think that it was good that I'd played Breath of the Wild around the same time, because a lot of the ideas that they had for Breath of the Wild, they'd actually had since around Twilight Princess or so, and you can see shades of them trying to do something like Breath of the Wild in both Twilight Princess and Skyward Sword. So it was kind of interesting to see where those ideas began, because the, you know, Breath of the Wild and Skyward Sword actually do have a lot of similarities. And I think that even though I did kind of get to see what those ideas would ultimately become, and I felt like that did, I guess, date Skyward Sword a little bit, there's also the fact that it did give me a greater appreciation for the storytelling, because the presentation of the story is top-notch. I do wish that Skyward Sword got to be the first one with voice acting, but... I'm not personally, like, I don't personally dislike Breath of the Wild story, but I do think that Skyward Sword definitely does win out in story presentation.
Yeah, actually, on the topic of Breath of the Wild, what are your thoughts on it? Is it a real Zelda game?
Boy. Okay. My words for this are actually lifted from the Zelda Universe panel at MAGFest last year, because I think it puts it so succinctly. No one has ever said Triforce Heroes doesn't count as a real Zelda game. Yes, it counts.
You know, it is a sort of a departure from something like Skyward Sword, but, like, do you think that that's something that, like, is that a positive move? Because you like Skyward Sword,
yeah.
You know, but was it a positive move to move to this other stuff in Breath of the Wild, do you think?
I mean, I do like Skyward Sword. I do think that the last third of the game is definitely the weakest, where they just have you revisiting the same areas again for, you know, second time over and not a lot changed. I do like the game, though, but I do think that Breath of the Wild is a positive move. I think it was high time to try new things. They had these ideas for a very long time, and you could see them... Again, like, the fact that Skyward Sword and Twilight Princess have a lot of similarities to it, you can see that this is where they were going with it for a while. And, you know, where do you really draw the line of it, you know, it has to have not more than this many new ideas to not count as a new Zelda game, when a lot of the ideas in Breath of the Wild... all existed before, just not really at the same time. And I also think that Breath of the Wild is the most like Zelda 1 of any game since Zelda 1.
Yeah.
And with that argument, you could say that it's the most Zelda-like game that there is, if you really consider the original game to be what the series, you know, should be. I don't personally think that way, but I think that there is an argument to be made there for people who do feel that way.
Yeah, it's really interesting what Breath of the Wild has done. Do you think, in terms of the next Zelda game, in terms of Zelda 2020 or whatever, what do you think... like, what should be capped and what should be dropped? Where do you think the Zelda series should go in the future?
Okay. I actually do like the shrines. I do like them a lot. I'm not sure if I'd have that many of them if it came at the expense of having big dungeons throughout the world. I don't think I'm alone in saying that I want more than 6 large dungeons in the world, because I think I would like to see that a bit more. Shrines are nice for a pick-up-and-play kind of thing, because it was always nice whenever I was waiting someplace, and it would give me something to do that I could do from start to finish, with the Switch being portable. I think that was a good fit. I'm fine with the open world. I'm fine with the items and how they worked. I'm fine with weapon durability being a mechanic. Personally, I don't dislike the weapon durability. I know that it feels really weak when you first start the game, but it encouraged me to try new things in ways that I don't think I would have otherwise.
Yeah, a lot of people felt like the bosses were a bit weak.
Yeah, I can agree there.
And that the dungeons, they felt like the dungeons didn't really count as big dungeons. What did you think of the 4, you know, Flying Bird and Movie Camel and all of their friends?
All the animal friends. Well, I have to say that that Varuda, I hope I have the name right, the Zora one, that one really blew me away the first time I did it. Not so much for the dungeon itself, but just the spectacle of getting into it for the first time, and that being the first dungeon that I'd found. That was an unforgettable moment where I'm just like, okay, wow, that was just entering the first dungeon. Wow. I think that was one of the highs that I had in that entire playthrough. I like the creativity of moving the dungeon itself to change things inside of it, but I will say that as, I guess, a traditional Zelda dungeon, I think that actually Link's Divine Beast was the most like that. I think that, you know, it is, I felt like it was longer and bigger than the other two. I felt like it had a lot more to do. It felt a lot more like a traditional Zelda dungeon, how fitting that it's Link's dungeon.
Yeah. Well, actually, my favorite dungeon in the game, or which possibly the best dungeon in the entire series, is Hyrule Castle in Breath of the Wild.
Yes, that I was going to get to that after that, but I agree with you. What do you like about it?
Well, it's just the atmosphere and the fact that they bring you into it early in the game, like they trick you. At just some random stables, there's just some guy saying, "Oh, could you go get me some like weapons from the Hyrule Castle?" And you're there with like three hearts, and you go, "Sure, great, that sounds like great fun." And you go in, and you're being shot by lasers, and there's towers, and you get locked into rooms with horrifying monsters, and you know you're trying to sneak around this giant evil disaster zone, and that was just like really. A really great atmosphere.
I can agree there. I actually didn't find that quest until near the end of the game. I took a really off the beaten path after getting off the Great Plateau.
Yeah.
So I didn't have that experience, but I agree with you. The atmosphere is great. I like how just it takes a familiar location, makes it very threatening in a way that I don't think had been done quite to that effect before. Even though Dark Hyrule Castle has been a dungeon in Minish Cap, Twilight Princess, and a few other times, I think that it was done to the best effect in Breath of the Wild.
So, that's your thoughts on The Legend of Zelda. What are your thoughts on your own future prospects? Do you think in 20 years, are you envisioning yourself as a Let's Player who's gonna, you know, sit in his rocking chair and wag his cane? Or are you going to be like, "Oh, I'm going to take my skills in video production and try and get into the TV industry or something"? Like, what are your plans for, I guess, if YouTube doesn't last forever?
Okay, well, I know that YouTube will not last forever. Everyone's day will come eventually. Like, that just happens. It's the nature of the beast. I would like to keep doing this as long as I can because I do really like doing this. I like making videos for the internet, and I would gladly do it as long as I still realistically could. There's always this thought, like, I remember in my early 20s, I was thinking that, you know, when I'm 30, it's going to, you know, I'm going to be way too old to be doing this. It just isn't going to work anymore. But meanwhile, I see Lucagen being in her 40s, and she's still as great as ever. And, you know, I would never think of her as, you know, an age or anything like that. She's just a really good personality. And that does give me a lot of hope and motivation for thinking that, you know, maybe there is no, you know, too old to do this.
I guess if you, like, past YouTube, are you happy to continue in, I guess the space of, because there's the production side of things, there's the release side of things, and then there's like the fan side of things. Are you still wanting to do something for a big audience, or, you know, to interact directly with an audience? Like, is that something that isn't of interest to you?
The interactive nature is something that's very unique to the internet, I feel. And I feel like that's part of the experience that I would always want to have if I could.
Yeah.
So that's part of the reason why I didn't just, you know, go off and try to work for somebody else.
Well, good luck for the future, Chugga A. Conroy. We'll end our interview here. If you have any ideas on Chugga A. Conroy's middle name, be sure to let us know.
I'd like to hear them too.
Otherwise, you can follow Chugga Conroy on his channel, and you can follow us on our podcast, and we'll have a great time.
Well, thank you so much for having me. Thank you, everyone. And I guess I'll talk to you another time because I can never seem to get rid of you.
Thank you. Give us one of your famous sign-outs.
See you guys then.
Peace.
The pause. I love you, man. I love you, man. I love you, man.
Wow. That was so good.
Thanks, Kelly. I didn't even script it.
No, we don't script anything here at Zoo... What was that supposed to be? Zoo? We don't script anything here at ZU.
Ha ha ha! In any case, here is Realm Wings. He has more segments than he has years of his life. Because he's young. And he's got multiple segments on the podcast. I'm just explaining the joke to people.
Why are you like this?
Okay, so the joke is, so there's Realm Wings, right? Realm Wings, he's young. He's a baby. He was born like when Breath of the Wild came out. And and here he is. He's going to talk about Spirit Track, which probably, actually that probably came out the year he was born. So, you know, it's a great time. Spirit Tracks, what do you think about Spirit Tracks?
I like Spirit Tracks. I didn't really have a problem with the game. It wasn't a bad game, but it also wasn't a great game. I think it was pretty limited by the handheld aspect of the 3DS, but I really appreciated the fact that you had to actually use the microphone to blow into it when you were trying to blow the musical, whatever that musical thing was called. What was it called? Flute?
The guitar?
Flute?
The pan flute.
Pan flute? Is that what it is? I'm Googling it right now. Hang on.
It's a pan flute.
It's a flute. It's a spirit flute. It's a spirit flute. None of us were right, Cody. It's a spirit flute. It literally says spirit flute. It says it resembles a pan flute, but it is a spirit flute.
Sure, yeah, but look, Link's train isn't technically a train. It's like a ghost train, but it's still that doesn't make it not a train. And so here is Realm Wings with a segment on Spirit Tracks.
Hey everyone, Realm here, and today I'm here to talk about a game. That game is, of course, Mario Super Sluggers. Perhaps one of the greatest pieces of art attributable to humanity, the game plays on various biblical correlates to- I'm sorry? This is the ZU cast? Okay, well, this isn't what I signed up for. Though, do I have to? Fine, I'll do it. No, you don't need to monitor me, I swear I'll do it. I'll figure something out. Oh, for God's sake, I swear the Lego Star Wars incident was a one-time thing. What? It's a good game. Okay, from the top. Hey everyone, Realm here, and today I'm here to talk about a game. A game that, frankly, has a weird place both within the community and the series. That game is The Legend of Zelda Spirit Tracks. Seldom discussed, and even less often praised, the game is one of the entries in the series that has just kind of disappeared from the discussion and the collective consciousness of the community. It's been left in a bit of a gray area. It has its fans and its detractors, but both groups are relatively small, meaning it's really barely ever discussed. I haven't forgotten, though, nor will I till the day I die, and I see it as my personal duty to tell the world about this game. So, to begin, a quick primer on the game's history. Spirit Tracks was released in 2009 for the Nintendo DS, only having one re-release to date, being its Virtual Console port to the Wii U in 2016. The game was scored by the legendary Koji Kondo and directed by Daiki Iwamoto, who also directed Phantom Hourglass, the game's direct predecessor, as well as having had roles in the development of Ocarina of Time, A Link to the Past, and Four Swords Adventures, and would go on to work on Skyward Sword, direct The Wind Waker HD, supervise A Link Between Worlds and Triforce Heroes, and act as assistant director for Breath of the Wild. As just mentioned, the game is a direct successor to 2007's Phantom Hourglass, both in the sense of plot, coming timeline-wise several generations after its predecessor and featuring at least one character in common, as well as in the sense of gameplay and style, both artistically and basic gameplay-wise being almost identical. Now, that's enough boring history. This segment is, after all, why you should play the game, not why you should be aware in extensive detail of the career of Daiki Iwamoto. So, why should you? We'll begin at the title screen. When you first open the game, you will see a lone train in a black void, the only sound of the workings of the machine. It's a little mysterious. Why are you in a void, train? Where are you from, train? Are you really who you say you are, train? Anyway, as the locomotive continues on, you see a pinprick of light, which becomes a spot, which becomes bigger and bigger until the train is within it. Then, as the light falls away, you see the world, and your eyes follow Link and Zelda's out onto it, as a theme that is so quintessentially Zelda begins to play. Now, it may seem weird to dwell on this tiny scene for so long, but it really captures what I think is so special about this game. Even with its limited resources, the game makes you want to explore, even more than many Zeldas that came after it, and rewards you for it. Its world, really, isn't all that big, but it makes you want to just see that next town, stop at that next station. If you play straight through the game following only the main quests, you really miss so much. There are countless things you'll never experience that are just so interesting and fun, but you never even know. What I love about this game is that it presents you with a very initially shallow-seeming experience, but is able to deepen beyond what anyone might expect if given the opportunity. And it's in this way that we come to the game's world. Spirit Tracks has four main regions, or realms, being forest, snow, ocean, and fire, visited in that order, with a fifth sub-realm within the ocean realm being sand. Each realm contains one dungeon, one sanctuary, which is functionally a mini-dungeon, one main village, two in the case of the forest realm, none in the case of the sand realm, and various other side areas. Most of these side areas are completely skippable in the main game, only accessible after having restored tracks to these areas with Force Gems, items received after having completed side quests. At the center of the map is the Tower of Spirits, which is oft returned to both to continue climbing following each dungeon, or simply as a convenient path between realms. Notable side areas include the Lost at Sea Station, featuring an optional dungeon known as the Lost at Sea Temple, Rabbit Land Rescue, the location where you receive the rabbit net and can visit rabbits you've previously rescued, and the Private's Hideout, featuring a fun little minigame. While the side quests in this game are too numerous to list here, rest assured that each is, while not necessarily unique, enjoyable in its own way. The vast majority of these quests are some sort of escort mission in which you have either a passenger that you are chauffeuring and must keep happy, or a product that you are delivering and must not damage. Both things are done in similar ways, but that's more a discussion for the upcoming gameplay section and will be discussed there. Aesthetically, the world is, while not incredibly detailed due primarily to hardware limitations, extremely vibrant and alive. From the birds following your train and pigs grazing in the fields, to rabbits hiding beneath almost everything, to the occasional bandits or pirate attacks, the world feels alive and lived in, and is a pleasure to go through, not just something to buffer different areas. Even when just going between areas, the travel never really feels like a chore because it's just so enjoyable. Each town has people standing around, working, or simply going about their business, adding another layer of immersion. Close to the world are the characters, of which there are a wealth of. Of course, I don't have time to discuss them all here, but among my favorites are Nico, the old pirate with many stories, Lineback the Third, a businessman with a proud ancestry, Ferris, the traveling photographer and train enthusiast, Angie, the sage, well, sage, and the postman, because his outfit is just so cute in this game. Of course, again, there are countless more that I'd love to talk about, but time is always too short. The game features three main races, being the Gorons, who inhabit the Fire Realm, the Inuki, or Anauki, I never really knew how to pronounce it, who inhabit the Snow Realm, and of course the Hylians, who inhabit both the Forest and Ocean Realms. Beside these three races, there also exists the only original race in this game, the Locomo, a race of humanoids with mechanical, wheelchair-esque bottom halves. There are seven Locomo characters in the game, five of whom are sages, being Embrose, Carbon, Steam, Gage, and Rail, one of whom is Angine, the guardian of the Tower of Spirits, and one of whom is Byrne, or Byrne, there's another one I don't know how to pronounce, corrupted apprentice of Angine. None of the Locomo characters, save Angine and Byrne, serve significant plot purposes outside of helping Link to find the next dungeon, but are each unique and interesting all the same, and are featured in several side quests. Angine and Byrne, however, have a fascinating story of an old master and a trainee tempted into darkness. Speaking of which, since I'm not actually going to discuss the story of the game in any significant fashion to avoid spoilers in case this segment inclines someone to play the game, I'll briefly discuss it now, alongside perhaps the most important character in this game, as well as one of the best in the series. The story of Spirit Tracks really doesn't do a whole lot out of the ordinary. It has a fairly standard, even for Zelda, good versus evil story that, though not featuring Ganondorf, very well could have without compromising the story, with little to no nuance outside of a single area, Zelda. Perhaps the series' least nuanced character, she's really the last one you'd expect to be most interesting in a game with such a standard story, and yet, here we are. While Zelda's character certainly doesn't do anything groundbreaking, especially considering characters outside of the Zelda series, she is a wonderful breath of fresh air both for Zelda as a character and the companion character archetype generally. While the series' most generally hated companions, namely Nafir, Fear, Fire, whatever, are mostly just along for the ride, so to speak, not really having any personal motivations or reasoning in the story, Spirit Tracks' Zelda has, while not incredibly deep, a meaningful story that's easy to get invested in. The game really feels like The Legend of Zelda because, when it comes down to it, she really is this game's main character, with Link being the companion. And, even though I haven't been exactly flattering to this game's story, that isn't to say that it hurts the game. You can still very easily become invested in a story with little nuance, which is certainly true of this game. Finally, because, well, it is a game, the gameplay. To begin, the gameplay of Spirit Tracks can essentially be split up into two parts, being train and on foot. Seeing as it's simplest, we'll start with the train. Being the main mode of transportation between the game's various areas, you're going to be in your train a lot. It has four speed levels: high, low, stop, and reverse. In normal, non-side quest play, there's really no reason to ever use low, since there are no consequences for going at the highest speed all the time. The train is also equipped with a cannon, which we'll use to ward off enemies or blow up rocks to find rupees or hearts, as well as a whistle to scare off stray livestock or enemies. The game has a wealth of train upgrades that, except for one, are completely optional. The camera in the train sections is free, which means you can look all around you in glorious three dimensions by dragging the stylus across the screen. While this can become occasionally frustrating when trying to track moving enemies, it is quickly mastered and rarely a problem. Enemies on and off the tracks include Bulblins, who will shoot bomb arrows at your train, Bulbos, who will simply charge directly into your train, pirate ships or tanks, which will shoot their cannons at you, and dark or armored trains, which both travel along the tracks themselves and will instantly destroy your train if you come into contact with one. There are at least several trains of these varieties in each area, and force you to plan your trips more strategically so as to not get into a sticky situation along the way. They can be slowed by your cannon, but never entirely stopped or destroyed, so you can't simply power your way through. This means that, even in the late game, train travel is a bit of a puzzle that you have to solve every time you go. Even more of a puzzle is the train gameplay in the side quest sections. In these missions, the signs that you've been seeing along the tracks indicating speeds and when to blow the whistle, among other things, suddenly have meaning. For character escort missions, you must obey laws on the tracks to a T, lest your passenger become dissatisfied with your service. For product deliveries, you have to watch your speed so as not to hit corners too fast and damage the product, but also occasionally have to try to go as fast as possible so it won't spoil. If you do play the game, I implore you to play as many of these missions as possible, because until you do, the train gameplay really never clicks. It's difficult to properly explain, but in these missions you actually feel like a conductor running a tight schedule, having to constantly micromanage the workings of your train. It's an awesome feeling to get a perfect delivery just in the nick of time. As I've said before, for me, even in the late game, train travel never became boring, but even if it does for some people, it can be lessened. While the game features no actual fast travel system, it does feature various gates around the world, unlocked with force gems, that can be used to more quickly transport you between realms. The gates don't, however, indicate easily to which location they lead, which means that to use them efficiently, you have to have a good understanding of the world and locations and how best to get to your destination. Now for the so-called on-foot sections of the game. Spirit Tracks, when not on the train, has a fixed top-down camera and is effectively a 2D Zelda. Link is controlled in the relatively unconventional method of its predecessor, being placing your stylus on the lower screen and leading him with it. The stylus is used for essentially everything: sword swings, items, rolls, etc. While this control method is at times cumbersome, I'd say that overall it is more innovative and fun than it is unpleasant. More complicated sword maneuvers can at times be frustrating, but the combat is never hectic enough for this problem to become very noticeable. Usage of old items, such as the bombs, boomerang, and bow, as well as new items, such as the sand wand, whirlwind, and whip, however, is much more precise than anything that preceded it, and in the case of at least the boomerang, anything that succeeded it. The bombs can be thrown directly to a point instead of being simply dropped or thrown an automatic distance, while the boomerang can be perfectly directed by drawing its path with the stylus. Despite an odd playstyle, the item gameplay and combat is surprisingly tight. Combat feels hard-hitting, and though the game purposefully never throws too much at you, still challenging and rewarding for more skilled players. While you can play through just using the sword and items only when necessary, you can also, as with almost any Zelda game, use your items in new and creative ways to defeat enemies more efficiently. While this isn't by any means a feature unique to Spirit Tracks, the more intricate control over your items offers more options and combinations for such strategies. Closely linked to gameplay is the game's dungeon, which is why they're being discussed here and not in the world section. Spirit Tracks, as has been discussed before, has five main dungeons, being forest, snow, ocean, fire, and sand temples, as well as one Temple of the Ocean King reminiscent dungeon split up into small pieces and revisited after every main dungeon, being the Tower of Spirits. The tower is structured like, well, a tower, having you clear a floor after each main dungeon, eventually making your way to the top. It is vastly superior to the Temple of the Ocean King in the fact that it, as opposed to forcing you to travel through everything you've already beaten on each return trip, simply has you enter at the next level up from where you finished on your previous visit. While many seem to dislike these sections, I personally found them enjoyable mini-dungeon-style challenges and, though a bit linear, having enough variety in theme and enemies on each floor to keep it feeling fresh each time. For the main dungeons, as clearly evidenced by their names, they don't have much going on in the originality department, but are still enjoyable. I'd argue that the dungeons, though fun, are actually the game's weakest link, early ones at times far too easy. You certainly won't get lost in these, but that's not necessarily a detriment, and difficulty isn't for everyone. The dungeons certainly aren't uniformly unenjoyable, and each offer at least something fun and unique. That said, though, if you're a player for whom dungeon difficulty and individuality is an integral part of your experience, this game may not be for you. That said, though, in discussion of games and really anything, we tend to get really caught up in superlatives. The best to this, the worst to that. I don't think that Spirit Tracks is the best Zelda game, but I do think that it's a good game. It's a game that I think you'll have fun playing. I don't write this to convince anyone that Spirit Tracks is better than their favorite Zelda or anything. If any one person hears this and decides to play the game and enjoys themselves, then I've done my job. So, if anything should be taken away from this, it's that every once in a while, we should take a break from our games of the year and give some love to a game that's just pretty good. And hey, hopefully enjoy ourselves while we're doing it. This is Realm, for the ZUBC, signing out.
Thanks, Realm Wings, for that segment on Spirit Tracks. Spirit Tracks is, in fact, like 15th out of 17 Zelda games, but it's okay, it's fine. It's, that still makes it like an 8 out of 10. So, we're coming to the end of this very exciting podcast episode. You can find us on iTunes, you can find us on Google Play, Stitcher, whatever else we've added ourselves to. So if you subscribe and leave a rating and review, etc., you probably hear that from every podcast you listen to, but that's because that's how they get popular. The algorithm decides which podcasts to show people based on who's rating and reviewing it, etc. So if you have the time, it'd be great if you did that. We have some social media presences of our own. You can find me at Magicody on Twitter. That's M-A-G-I-C-O-D-Y. I am, in fact, an award-winning, and by award-winning, I mean I was a viral meme once.
You only need to go viral once.
Yeah, that's what they say. That's my motto. Kelly, where can people find you?
You can find me on Twitter. My handle is Kelly the Editor, K-E-L-L-Y. T-H-E-E-D-I-T-O-R.
Yeah, that's where you can find us. Please send us feedback so that we can have more feedback segments. We had a bit of feedback between episodes, but not really.
You have literally said feedback like 6 times in that last sentence.
Yeah, well, I'm trying to get people to give us feedback. So,
but why do we need feedback? What's the point of feedback?
So, you got some feed, right?
Yeah.
Someone's taken it.
They took it away?
They took away your feed. And so what do you want to do?
I want it back.
Yeah, you want to get your feed back.
Otherwise,
would be nice. How are you gonna eat?
I mean,
that's just common sense, yeah.
Taco Bell delivers now, so.
That's right. We want to get our Uber Eats back. Is not quite, doesn't have the same ring to it. But yeah, so if you've got feedback for us, podcast@zeldauniverse.net. We love to read it out and make fun of people and all of that kind of things.
And we honestly didn't have any feedback for this segment because there wasn't enough of it. So now we have to talk about feedback on the podcast.
Feedback.
Because we need a lot of feedback.
Feedback. Feedback. Feedback.
I'm being forced to do this. Don't hate me.
Feedback. Feedback. Feedback, feedback. That's the feedback song. Hope you enjoyed the show. We will leave it to the one and only Eslo Spirit to provide us with some credits and then stick around because we do like to do bloopers at the end of these shows. So see you next time.
See you guys. Thanks for having me. Don't have me on the podcast again, please. I'd really, really, really appreciate it if you guys didn't like me. So that I don't have to do this ever again.
Yeah, so tell her to come back on the podcast so I can host with her again.
No, please, don't subject me to this torture.
See you next time!
Bye!
Well, that was, interesting. Thanks for sticking it out through the shenanigans in this episode of the ZU Cast. Let's do the credits thing. In case you somehow missed this fact, today's hosts were Cody Davies and the oh-so-brave Kelly Timmerman. Brian Thomas shared some of his hopes and dreams for the newly announced Link's Awakening remake for Switch. The Zelda Anne returned to report some ZU updates from across the Zelda Universe network. Randy Marr finally gave us another installation in his recurring Hyrule Away from Hyrule segment, this time examining some Zelda-esque fashion found outside of the series. Realmwings gave us a double helping of his voice this episode, first in the community news, and then in a segment about my personal favorite handheld Zelda, Spirit Tracks. Cody interviewed special guest and friend of ZU, Chugga Conroy, who is currently in the middle of his Let's Play of Phantom Hourglass, which you should totally check out on his YouTube channel, Chugga Conroy. That's ChuggaConroy. The executive producer is Eden Biskin. That's me. Cody Davies is our consulting producer and simultaneously delightful and terrifying individual. Kelly Timmerman is our head editor, who probably hates me for throwing her into the recording booth with Cody. Brent Huckfield is our assistant editor, who works in our roundtable discussions, which will now be released alternating with these full episodes. Our public relations trio consists of Megan Negrelli, Mary Stowe, and Pietro Bucci. Joshua Lindquist is our technical advisor. Go check out his new Twitch stream on Zelda Universe TV on Wednesdays at 8 p.m. Pacific Time. Finally, super special thanks to Realmwings for creating our new planet-themed graphics. The ZU Cast is a production of the ZUBC, a division of Zelda Universe. Please give us some feedback. You can do so via email, podcast@zeldauniverse.net, via the ZU forums in our ZUcast 2018 hub thread in Community Central, via social media at Zelda Universe, or on Twitch or YouTube at Zelda Universe TV. If you give us feedback, we might read it on the next episode and weigh in on what we think of you. That's about it. Make sure to look out in the next couple of weeks for our next roundtable discussion, which will be released through exactly the same channels as this episode. I believe that roundtable moderator Peyton will be discussing combat in the Legend of Zelda series with his guests, so that should be exciting. Thanks again for listening. Ezlo Spirit out.
Okay, here we go. 3, 2, and here we go. Hello, every...
Sorry. Oh, God.
There's a blooper.
I'm gonna be quiet.
3, 2, 1. Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Zelda Universe podcast. I'm your host, Cody Coast. Let's start again. Okay, 3, 2, 1.
I'm Cody.
I'm Cody. Okay. 3, 2, 1.
Wait, you mean you, Cody? Not a separate Cody?
There's only one Cody. I'm like Madonna. I've just got the name Cody and everyone recognizes me.
Yeah, so. Everybody recognizes you because of that Aussie accent.
Howdy. Do you recognize me now? There's a snake in my boot.
Are you trying to do an American accent right now?
Somebody poison the water hole.
Alright, we're not in
You're
Toy Story
favorite
Land.
You're my deputy.
I love that Toy Story is the only way you can say American words.
Howdy. And...
I really think that should be the name of your next podcast when it's just you. And Cody, you should be interviewing yourself.
That is a good idea.
That's a fantastic idea. I'm sure we'll get
millions
of views. No, let's not do it right now, please.
Hello, my name is Cody. I'm here interviewing American Cody. Yeehaw!
I'm so sorry, everybody.
What are you doing at the moment, Cody? I'm a recording a podcast.
I made what a mistake, everybody.
What
I'm
are your
so
favorite
sorry.
Favorite things, Cody?
I
like guns and freedom.
I didn't choose this. I was forced. I lost a bet. I made a mistake.
Okay, and we can just keep this.
Yeah,
yeah.
Don't cut. It's so much easier when it's one long solid thing. Oh my God, Cody, why?
I said nothing.
Why, Cody? Stop! I hate you, Cody. Thanks, Anne. Hey, Cody, got a question for ya.
Hello.
Hello. Hi, Cody.
What is your question for me?
I can't come back from that. I was not expecting that.
Derailed by a hello.
I can't with you. I can't.
Into the blue as it goes.
Why are you like this? Thanks, Anne. Hey, Cody, got a question for ya.
Hello.
I knew you were gonna do that. Why do I even let myself be subject to torment by you? Why do I allow this? Thanks, Anne. Hey, Cody. Are you kidding me right now,
I'm trying
Cody?
Not to say hello.
I was expecting you to say hello this time. You know what? Hang on. I need to make a very important phone call.
Hello?
Hello?
Hi, Eli. It's Kelly.
Hi.
Why did you make me do this podcast with Cody?
I didn't.
What's that feedback email, Kelly?
I don't know.
Did you know that sometimes a chair isn't a chair?
What?
Did you know that sometimes a chair isn't a chair?
I mean, sure, if a chair doesn't want to be a chair, it doesn't have to be a chair. A chair could be a table if it really wanted.
Hey, when is a chair not a chair?
When people aren't sitting in it?
When it's a jar!
So, Cody.
Hello.
I heard that you had a very special guest.
I do have a very special guest.
Nope. Let's redo that. I'm never gonna get through this podcast, Elias. I can't do it. I quit. Can you fire me? Elias, can you fire me on the podcast just so I don't have to finish?
You know, I'm afraid that I don't really have any authority over this particular podcast area.
Who's my boss, then? Because I need to talk to them about firing me.
Hello?
Do you want to get edited out of this podcast, Cody?
Do you want to get edited out of this podcast, Kelly?
Are you just repeating what I'm saying?
Are you just repeating what I'm saying?
I'm going to call Elias again.
Ring, 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 ring. Hello? It's me, Elias.
Why are you so mean?
You didn't file your paperwork, Mike Wazowski.
That is not Elias at all. Elias is a gentle, nice human being.
Sure. Right, go ahead.
So, Cody, I heard you... Nope.
For Cody.
I don't know if the microphone picked that up, but I just hit my head against the table because I'm so done with you.
Hello, everyone, so and welcome to the Zelda Universe podcast. My name is Cody, and I'm here with Kelly. Hi, Kelly.
Hi, Cody.
Hello. So.
Hello.
Welcome,
how are you?
Welcome, everyone, to the Zelda Universe podcast. We've got a great show lined up for you today. We've got people. We've got people like Brian. We've got people like Realm Wings. We've got people like Anne.
Chugga Conroy.
Chugga Conroy. That's right. That's his name. We've got Reggie Feeds Me, except we do not, because he's gone.
He's retired. He is just retired. He's not gone. He is retired. You need to be very specific when you say that.
You know, in the famous words of our editor, Kelly Clarkson, it's since you've been gone. Do you see my reference? That was a Kelly Clarkson song.
That on my headset, way down on the cord, there's literally a button that if you press it, turns the mic to mute. Guess what I did?
In case you somehow missed this fact, today's hosts were Cody Davies and the oh-so-brave... Well, that's the fire alarm. Good going, people. Gotta go.
Colonel Eggy, what's your position? Roger that. Mobilize the troops and blast the enemy with charm on my mark.
Ring, ring. Ring, ring. Hello, is this Woody? There is a snake in my boot. Hi, Woody.
Cody, you're not funny.